Some people spend an entire lifetime wondering if they've made a difference in the world, but the Marines don't have that problem. That was from Ronald Reagan, U.S. President, 1985. Today's Veterans Radio program is dedicated to all the men and women who have served and are now serving in the United States Marine Corps. Semper Fi.
From the studios of Ave Maria Radio in Ann Arbor, this is Veterans Radio. And now, here's your host, Bob Gould.
And welcome to Veterans Radio. We're right here broadcasting from beautiful Ann Arbor, Michigan. Once again, another program, Veterans Radio, all part of the Ave Maria Radio Network. And I want to welcome our terrestrial listeners, and I want to welcome all of our web listeners and our pod listeners and our Facebook and our Twitters and, wow, all these ways to get in touch with us. Mm-hmm. And at the board today is, of course, hello, Nina.
Good morning, Bob. It's a pleasure to be here today.
It's a pleasure having you again. Her flying fingers make things all come out so well. And I can see just his arm. I can see his arm. My partner right back there. There he goes. He's waving. Okay. Nope, that's it. He's waving. Dale's here today. And we've got what a program. It's all about the Marines. All about the Marines. And what does Marine... Oh, we've got so much to cover. What does Marine training mean to all the Marines, and how does that extrapolate into business? But before we get to that, we have a couple of guests with me right now. And in the studio with me is Andrew Turner and Laura Cheerio. They're both lieutenants in the Michigan National Guard, and they're also co-founders of the Veterans Refuge Network. Well, wow, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thank you, Bob. We appreciate you having us on.
Thanks for having us, Bob. We really appreciate it.
Tell us, well, here, I wanted to read this, that when you first came back, there was a yearly reunion from you folks that were there in Iraq, and your organization is building a community of veterans, and it allows you veterans to maintain that sense of camaraderie after you return from the war. Tell us about that, Laura.
Well, Bob, every year when I come back, when I came back from Iraq, my platoon sergeant, he's the one that hosts the party. So every year we get our group together. We're the only platoon from my company that does that. And it just gives us a chance to all get back together, see each other face to face, relive those old stories, embellish on them every year. They always get better. But it makes sure that we don't get too far from each other. We're always able to stay connected.
Well, but sometimes I hear, hey, we just want to go home and forget about it and start our lives. Are you finding that to be true, too, or is that what the guys want to do? They want to get back together.
I think when they're in the moment, they want to go home and forget about it, but the further away they get from it, the more they realize that that's not possible. So having that camaraderie with your friends that you served with enables you to not have to forget about it or suppress it, but you can talk about it with somebody that understands, somebody that knows what it was like when you were there also, so you don't have to get into all the weeds with it.
And you're currently recruiting more and more people onto your network, right? And
yeah, absolutely. So one of the main goals of our organization at this stage is to make sure we establish this community of veterans so that nobody feels like they don't have that sense of camaraderie anymore, that they're lost and that they're out there alone. We want them to know that they can be a part of us and that we can help them with what they need.
Now, Laura, as your mission, you're talking again about a refuge for military veterans. Well, why don't you explain a little bit about that, your mission?
Well, Bob, our mission is to serve as a refuge for military veterans, their families, and their support systems. We want to be there for them in a time of crisis, providing them to the adequate resources that they need to aid them in their overall health and well-being. Like Andrew stated earlier, we need to have that same sense of family, togetherness, camaraderie that they had when they were deployed. Their guys were there all the time. They knew that they could rely on them. And then when they come home, sometimes they feel like they're lacking in that. And that's kind of what we're striving to do. And right now, we're like you said, we're still recruiting people, like-minded people. Our mission is big, and our dream is big, but with the right amount of like-minded people, you know, we can accomplish a lot of great things.
Well, let me give this out real quick. It's called the Veterans Refuge Network at gmail.com. The Veterans Refuge Network at gmail.com. What do you want folks to do?
Well, we want people to let us know that we want them to share their stories with us. If they had a loved one that struggled coming home from Iraq, what worked for them? We want to partner with these type of people. We want, you know, we need help financially, obviously, because we have big goals that we're working towards.
Give us a goal.
The goal, Laura, if you want to talk about our
go ahead,
our,
Laura,
our
give
greater
us a goal.
Vision is.
Well, we don't have a dollar amount now. Our dream is big. What we want
2 million.
Have,
there's a good.
That's a good number.
2 million will get us started. How about that?
It's a good start. What we're looking towards is to have a facility and a good amount of land where we can have guys go and they can achieve recovery. They can work together. They can go hiking and fishing, and they can have bonfires if they want. But also, it's not just a resort. It's not a retreat. It's a place where they can go and actually get recovery. And what that looks like is, just as the symptoms of PTSD vary, every guy experiences PTSD in a different way. So are the treatments. The treatments are just as different, and we want them to understand, and we want to provide different kinds of holistic therapies. If art therapy does it for them, if hiking and fishing and holistic different therapies does that, we want to be able to provide that.
Do you have a facility right now that you meet? Do you meet in a church? Do you meet in a school?
We don't have a facility yet. The three of us have been meeting normally over food. That's kind of what we've been doing lately. We don't have a facility yet, but that's our long-term goal, is to have a facility like that on a large lot of land.
Well, it sounds like part of your intervention also will be those that are in crisis, and that could include suicide. Isn't that right, Drew?
Yeah, absolutely. So every day in this country, 22 veterans commit suicide, Bob, and we find that to be an unacceptable number. So we understand that we have a long-term vision of building this facility, but we don't have the time to wait for that facility to come around to start making a difference. So in the meantime, we're trying to spread awareness of that problem. So like being on here with you today, this is huge for us to try to let people know that there really is a big problem.
Well, I know, but what can they do with that, with your group?
Well, we have access to resources that maybe the veteran doesn't know about. So on our blog, we have an extensive list of resources that we put together, because a lot of times the veteran doesn't know where to go. So if we can help them get to that proper resource, then that's going to help them in the immediate future or in the immediate time.
I think that's very true. That I know that veterans, they want to go home and forget about it. And unfortunately, sometimes it does affect them later on. And going to the VA is not always an option. It may be geographically not possible, or, mm-hmm. hey, they just don't want to go. They want to have some anonymity.
Right.
And they get, what, do you have a phone number?
Well, the best way to get a hold of us is at the Gmail that you put out earlier.
Why don't you give us that again, Drew?
So it's veteransrefugenetwork@gmail.com. They can also get a hold of us on our Facebook, so facebook.com/veteransrefugenetwork. We're on Twitter @veteransrefuge, and then we run a blog, too, where we keep track of our progress. We're trying to let people know exactly what we got going on, and they can see our blog at veteransrefugenetwork.blogspot.com.
And they can, you know what, I'm really not much into the whole, so they can be able to communicate with you folks, right?
There's plenty of ways to communicate with us, absolutely.
And that's one of our goals, is we want to get people talking.
That's right.
It's important to get people talking. We want to hear your stories. We want to share our stories. The more people we get talking about this, the better our chances to reduce the stigma. There's a large stigma surrounding PTSD, coming home and talking about things, but that's one of our goals, is to reduce the stigma and to get people talking.
You know, it's always interesting to me, the whole term PTSD is, I think it's very relatively new. It was called all kinds of things back in previous conflicts, but what I'm seeing is that you want to just get folks, get them together, networking and talking about. So even those that may not be in crisis or what, or know of a rel, they just may want to become part of this.
Absolutely.
And again, absolutely, I'm sure that. And again, you have them, and I want to read this again, the Veterans Refuge Network, veteransrefuge@gmail.com. The Veterans Refuge Network at gmail.com. Do you have a website?
Yeah, so like we said, the Facebook is the best way to get a hold of us. That's where we do all our social media. That's where people can get a hold of us, leave us messages, reach out to us. And by all means, we'll get back to them and respond. You know, have a good dialogue.
Well, what about us troglodytes that don't Facebook? What else? We should go back to the Gmail, right?
You should go back to the Gmail, or like maybe have a family member who's into Facebook and all that help. Yeah, that'll get you to us, Bob.
Or a neighbor, whatever.
Right. Whatever will get you to us.
Sure. I'm looking here now at, again, some of your goals. Laura, you're talking about holistic therapy, various forms, counseling. Oh, boy, that's pretty lofty. How are you able to holistic? That sounds mysterious. Tell us about that.
Absolutely. One of our goals is to be holistic. We want to meet the veteran's needs as a whole. We want to make sure that mind, body, and spirit, that we can help them heal. And that, you know, any kind of therapy that they need, that they deserve, we want to be able to help provide that.
So you have all these resources now at your fingertips, and you're waiting now to keep this interaction going and to be able to put that all to those that are in need. Is that true?
Absolutely, and really connect with them.
And I know you also have some background besides being a second lieutenant in the Michigan National Guard that, by the way, you've been deployed too, correct?
No, I have not, Bob.
We had a colonel, and I have to say this, and maybe you can comment on this, Andrew.
Sure.
We had a colonel who has been a contributor here at Veterans Radio, and she was in Iraq and commanding an infantry 220, what is that, battalion?
That's probably company size.
That's company size. Sure. And I asked her, I said, you know, what was the hardest thing? You're over there. What was the hardest thing that you faced? And I'm thinking, well, get my respect to the men. And she said, keep my lipstick on. Because it was 130 degrees. Is that true?
Well, you have to maintain your humanity and do things that, you know, to not constantly be wrapped up in fighting the war. So, you know, things like one of our big recreation activities was playing ping pong. We would play ping pong for hours every night just to have an escape, just to clear your mind, get with the guys, kind of make fun of who the bad ping pong players were. And, you know, we would have tournaments just like it's getting ready to be March Madness. We'd have March Madness style ping pong tournaments. And it just helped us maintain a sense of normality in that extremely unnatural environment of war.
What were some of the other ways that you guys blew off steam?
Video
guys
games.
And gals, oh, Lord, better get that right.
A lot of video games. Halo was one of the big ones. I wasn't into it personally, but, I mean, we'd have guys connect their Xboxes together, and they would stay up all night long playing video games.
Did you play baseball?
Baseball, video games. I mean, we didn't have we had basketball courts, so we would do, they call it mandatory fun, because you don't have the option to sit back in the barracks and relax. But they make everybody get out and do basketball tournaments. We played some dodgeball, things like that.
So you have experience now at looking into this reduction of stress and things that you can counsel the people that come to your organization. Is that true?
Absolutely. And even firsthand experience, Bob. I mean, when I came back from Iraq, I was the same way. I didn't want to talk about it. I wanted to be left alone. I wanted to get back to my life. But fortunately, I had enough smart people around me that knew that was not a long-term solution.
And she's right next to you, right? Who is that?
This is my wife, Jamie. She's joining us too today. She's the third co-founder of our organization. But, yeah, I mean, having her as a support, and then also my platoon sergeant, who continued to get us together every year to make sure that I didn't lose that camaraderie and that bond with my guys, was instrumental in me having a healthy recovery long-term returning from Iraq.
And you had this notion to get this thing started. How did you meet up with Laura?
So Laura and I knew each other through college, through our ROTC program and commissioning together. Excuse me. So we first approached this idea about a year ago because Laura had a friend that committed suicide through her military family and came to us and wondered what she could do to comfort her friends and family. And I didn't have a good answer for her, Bob. But I committed to myself that I was going to make a difference somehow, and I wouldn't let that next family have to go through what she was going through. But Bob, a year later, the same thing happened in my own life, in my own military family, and one of my soldiers that I deployed with committed suicide. And excuse me. At that point, we realized we don't have all our ducks in a row. We're not 100% ready. We don't have 100 people supporting our organization, but the time is now. We have to act now because 22 a day is happening, whether or not we try to make a difference or if we wait to feel like we're more ready.
There's no greater time than today.
And again, I really want to emphasize, folks, you don't necessarily have to be contemplating suicide to give these folks.
Absolutely.
Right. No, you want to maybe get involved just to find out more information, get in on the loop, right?
Absolutely.
Laura?
That's right.
And your background, Laura, is?
In social work, Bob.
Oh.
I have a master's degree in social work.
From where?
From Barry University in southern Florida, Miami.
Well, that was a nice place to go to school.
Now I'm back in the cold.
That's a big veteran community. Are you at all familiar
Absolutely.
With anything?
Well, I didn't get too connected while I was down there, but it is a very large veteran community. The whole state of Florida really is.
Very much, yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, we've got about 20 seconds or so. Andrew, do you want to have something to say right now?
I just want to say that if people want to partner with us, join our Facebook page. If they want to donate financially, we have a GoFundMe account where they can search for GoFundMe.com/Zacks, ZACKS-PTSD. Zach was my friend that committed suicide. His father started this GoFundMe for us. So we appreciate anybody that wants to connect with us in any way.
Now they should contact you first when it comes to donations. Isn't that true?
Absolutely. And the last point to make, too, is Bob, this is not just about the veteran. This is about their family and their support system as well. We have resources that we can connect them with, because when a veteran is struggling, then it affects the whole family and their whole support system. So all of those are welcome to come reach out to
us. And, you know, if there's any American Legion folks or any Vietnam Veterans of America folks or any of those other service organizations, you're going to want to get a hold of these people at
Facebook/Veterans Refuge Network or email us at veteransrefugenetwork@gmail.com.
We really appreciate you having us on here, Bob, and helping us get our word out
there.
Thank you.
Thank you for getting up early on a Saturday morning. Maybe it'll be springtime.
Very worth it.
Yes, we all got our fingers crossed. We want to thank all of you. And, you know, folks, these are things that this is not government sponsored. All right. This is not coming from the state. This is not coming from the feds. This is coming from you and me, the veteran community. And that's what we want to encourage, is folks getting out there and starting these kinds of programs. I want to thank you very much. Would you please come back on the program again?
Absolutely. Whenever you're
Bob.
Ready to have us back, Bob.
Okay. Well, now, here we go, Nina, and we've got a break, and we'll be right back with our first guest, the author David Friedman of 30 Business Principles Through Marine Training.
This is Veterans Radio on WDEO 990 AM in Ann Arbor, Michigan, WMAX 1440 AM in Saginaw, Michigan, WDEO 98.5 FM in Naples, Florida, or listen to us online at AveMariaRadio.net.
You have honorably served the United States and the Marine Corps in times of peace and war. Now we would like to serve you. The Marine Scholars Program covers the total cost of attending Ave Maria University. By combining resources from the Ave Maria University Marine Scholars Funding, federal financial aid entitlements, and the GI Bill, the benefits are granted for the duration of the recipient's study at Ave Maria University, contingent upon good conduct and good academic standing. The Marine Scholars Program is open to all reserve and active component Marines and other combat veterans of Operation Enduring Freedom and Operation Iraqi Freedom who have honorably served our country. Please visit us online at www.avemaria.edu or call the Assistant Director of Admissions at 239-280-2552. You helped us. Now let us help you. Semper Fi.
From the halls of Montezuma to the shores of Tripoli, and right now to the studios of Ave Maria Radio. Wow, what an odyssey. And right now, my guest today is David H. Friedman, a contributing editor for Inc. magazine. He's author of many books about the U.S. Marines, of course, computer crime and artificial intelligence. Well, you know what? I don't want to lump them all together. I'm sure these are all separate topics that author David Friedman. Welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thank you very much. Great to be here.
I believe it's a Chinese proverb. It says, in order, there is creativity. And all of us it's not just Marines, folks. It's all of us that are in the service. We learn order. We learn order. We learn how to put things together and make it all come out so we can be creative and do the things that we do. And right now, Dave, why don't you help us out a little bit about how would you ever pick a topic like this?
Well, I think this is one of the most important topics there is out there, which is how do we accomplish more in life? What are some of the principles that enable us to be more effective, to do the right thing, to do it with integrity, to whatever our mission is in life, to get it accomplished and in a way that helps people pull together and really operate at their maximum capabilities. This is something I think that's good for humanity. It's good for us as individuals, and I happen to think that the Marine Corps has figured a lot of that out, much more so than most other organizations.
Well, you talk about the 70% solution. What is that?
So this is something that I think sort of plagues most of us in trying to be effective and even get through the day sometimes, which is we want to find the best way of doing things. And often what we'll do is we'll recognize that we probably haven't found the best way to do it, so we'll keep trying to find a better and better way. And what the Marines understand is that when time is of the essence, you can't wait for the best possible solution. On the other hand, you don't want to throw people into a situation, especially when lives are at stake, where failure can mean death. So what the Marines have figured out is there's really sort of a sweet spot in this equation, which is get a solution that has a 70% chance of working, and when you get that, go, do it. Don't spend more time trying to get to 80% or 90%. But on the other hand, if you only have a 60% solution, that's not quite good enough. So come up with something better. And this gives a rule of thumb for figuring out how much time you should put into a decision-making process when time is really pressed.
You know, I'm looking at the 30 business principles that you outlined. I know you didn't start with 30. You probably started with one or two or three. How did you build it into 30?
Now, it really, and I want to emphasize, none of this is stuff, of course, that I made up out of thin air or just thought up just sitting around thinking about. This is stuff that I got when I spent a lot of time hanging out with Marines of all ranks and all different situations all around the world. And I took a lot of notes, and I just listened to the wisdom that was handed out to me. And most of the Marines that I spoke with were very humble, and they wouldn't pretend to have the answers to everything. But over time, when you press them, they have a lot of smart things to say. I was really just stunned by just the raw intelligence and wisdom and experience of so many of the Marines I met of all ages. I just wrote down the principles as they came to me, and when the smoke cleared and I went over all my extensive notes, and there were quite a lot, I researched this for over a year, these were the principles that really stood out to me.
Oh, a while back, and by the way, folks, you can find this on our archive programs. I believe it was about 4 years ago when the Marines were being... they had their own department. They were going to be taken off from the as part of the Department of Navy. We had Gunny Lee Ermey on, very famous for movie roles and television programs and getting the word out and Marine support. Plus, he was a DI on our program. And I asked him that question. I said, what was the one thing that you took out of your Marine training? He thought for the longest time it was dead air, the dreaded dead air on radio. We thought we lost him, but he was thinking about that, gave it a good 10 seconds thought, and said, they taught me not to fail. Comment on that, Dave.
So it's true. When you have a mission, the Marines really get people to understand you've got to complete the mission. It's failure is not an option. And the idea that is really inculcated, I think, or certainly what a lot of people told me is, you really can't fail as long as you believe that you have to keep trying until you succeed. then failure becomes an impossibility. And this belief that you have to succeed, that you will succeed, is often critical to succeeding when the odds are against you and when it's very difficult, when it's a tough slog, when people's lives, including your own, are in danger. And Marines tend to worry about, I think, their fellow Marines' lives more than their own, which is an amazing thing in and of itself. And so this belief in success of the mission above all is critical to the success of the Marines. But, and this is an important point to understand, it's inevitable that not all missions can be completed. Some of the missions are just very, very hard. They're impossible. Sometimes just luck goes against you, and you can't always succeed. And so the real challenge to the Marines is, how do you give people a sense of you have to succeed in the mission, but also not make them feel as if everything is ruined if the mission fails, as if they can't go on as Marines? And the answer is, when the mission takes place, you have an attitude of you must succeed. Failure is not an option. But when it's all over, win or lose, you will be judged on the effort you put into it. And if you gave it the best possible shot, if you did everything you could, if you were as smart as possible and it just didn't work out, then your officers, your fellow Marines, will not make you feel bad about it. You will not be made to feel like a failure. And putting those two together really makes the formula for success here.
Well, again, as I said before, order, and that's what we learn in the military, order brings about creativity. And that means a whole lot of things. That, and especially the two folks that are still in the studio, actually, with me today, because that's what they did. They came up with some order, and they came up with creativity. They happened to be in the Army, but they were under the same sort of principles. And I know that this can be both for the Marines, for the Army, actually even Navy, and go out there and do your job. And that's what we did. By the way, next week, folks, we're going to be having a program on jobs. And once again, and that's what Veterans Radio is reaching out to the veteran community to provide jobs. And these are the things, the qualities that military folks bring to the civilian world. Just a second, Laura, you have a comment on that.
Yes, Bob. I'm looking at number 10, one of the rules that's on here. It says, employ extreme training. Situations faced on the job shouldn't seem more daunting than those faced in training. And that's one thing that the military teaches you, how to put that uniform on. But we're not always taught how to take that uniform off. And that's something at, you know, Veterans Refuge Network, is we want to help guys figure out what is the training. You know, the task being home shouldn't be more daunting than the actual task of being home. We want to help them train of how to transition back into the home life. And that's kind of the principle number 10 is something that we can identify with.
So it looks like there is not only cross-training, but there's cross-principles here, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
By the way, folks, if you have a question for our guest or Mr. Friedman, please call us at 877-573-7825. 877-573-7825. Dave, you have something here. Find the essence. Essence to me means put on the burners, boil it down until you get down to the nitty-gritty. Is that what that's all about, Dave?
It really is, and I think great leaders figure out how to turn complex situations into simple ones, because situations always are complex. There are many, many details to take in. There's a vast amount of information, and that problem is getting worse and worse for leaders in the military and everywhere as we get more extensive networks, better electronic tools, better intelligence. You can bury yourself in information, and it can be paralyzing. And what a great leader can do is look through all that and figure out what's really important here, and let me cut away everything else and really understand what's at the very, very core of what's going on here and what we have to do. What are the key points? And if you can simplify that way, that allows you to make more important decisions. Otherwise, you can get really buried in all the ancillary stuff, and all the stuff coming in can really distract you from the essential mission.
The book here is The 30 Management Principles by the U.S. Marines, author David H. Friedman. By the way, folks, you can go to our bookstore on veteransradio.net, click on that. And we do have the book there. Order it through Amazon. And that will also help Veterans Radio. And, of course, it gets you a copy of the book. We'll be right back after this very important Marine message, the Medal of Honor series that we have. We'll be right back. It's very short, so don't go away.
You're listening to Veterans Radio live from our flagship station, WDEO 990 AM in Ann Arbor, Michigan, WMAX 1440 AM in Saginaw, Michigan, WDEO 98.5 FM in Naples, Florida, or find us online at AveMariaRadio.net.
The Medal of Honor is the highest award for valor in combat given a member of the Armed Forces of the United States. There have been over 3,400 recipients of the nation's highest award. This is one of them. Ensign Robert Carey held a watertight door open to let crewmen escape despite escaping steam from a ruptured boiler. Details after this.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy?
For freedom.
Freedom of religion.
What America stands for.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy? For honor.
Everybody. And watch out for everybody.
Freedom to vote.
Democracy.
Freedom to go outside and play with my kids.
I joined the Navy to serve my country.
Every freedom that we have.
The right to raise our kids in peace.
My little brother.
My wife. My kids.
Our children's children.
The United States Navy.
It's not for ourselves alone that we serve.
Carey, on board the USS San Diego on January 21st, 1915, began to take half-hourly readings of the steam pressure at every boiler. He had read the steam and air pressure on number 2 boiler and was just stepping through the electric watertight door into number 1 fire room when the boilers in number 2 fire room exploded. Carey stopped and held open the doors, which were being closed electrically from the bridge, and yelled to the men in number 2 fire room to escape. 3 of them did. Carey's action undoubtedly saved the lives of these men. He held the doors probably a minute with the escaping steam from the ruptured boilers around him. His example of coolness did much to keep the men in number 1 fire room at their post, hauling fires, although 5 boilers in their immediate vicinity had exploded, and boilers number 1 and 3 apparently had no water in them and were likely to explode any instant. Carey directed the men in this fire room into the bunker, for they well knew the danger of these 2 boilers exploding. The Medal of Honor series is a production of Veterans Radio.
Oh, yeah, the Washington Post March, the few, the proud. Semper Fi, the Marines, and with me is author David H. Friedman, author of the 30 Management Principles of the U.S. Marines. Dave, we're now back, and we're at the what you have here, number 20, and there actually are 30, folks, and you can find all these when you purchase the book. Number 26, make organizational doctrine a living thing. Wow, what a statement. Tell us about that.
So you want an organization, and certainly the Marines have embodied this, where you have a set of standardized practices, where there's a book, where you can tell people how things are supposed to work, what are the principles, what are our standards, what do you do in this situation, and that becomes doctrine. And organizations need that, so you don't have everybody running around like chickens without heads. There are ways of doing things. On the other hand, one of those standardized practices should be, let's continually re-examine our standardized practices. They need to change. They need to adapt. There are new technologies. You learn things. The opposition changes. The environment changes. Your people change. And you need to adapt your practices to those changes. So you want the doctrine, but you don't want it so rigid and so codified that it can't evolve and meet new conditions, new demands, new circumstances.
Well, I have, again, Andrew stayed around with us because he wants to comment, even though he's an Army guy, but still, he started his own organization, and you had a chance to review this over the last week since we first started talking.
Right.
Tell us a little bit more of how some of these principles of just military training in general, how did that apply for you?
Well, first, good morning, Dave. I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you also. But one of the things that struck me is that none of these principles are standalone. They all work in coordination, and they all support each other. Is that something that you can talk about a little more?
That's a great observation. It's true. And let me just quickly throw in here, and this is something I really say very clearly in the book, that although this book focuses on the Marines, and I think there are special things about the Marines, and there are special things about every branch of the armed forces, they all have their own mission, their own ways of doing things, and there are many things in common as well. Nowhere do I ever say that the Marines are in any way better than the other branches of the military, or that every branch of the military doesn't deserve to be celebrated for the wonderful ways it operates. So thank you for your service, Andrew, and Laura, you too.
I have invited both Laura and Andrew to stay around after their interview this morning, because my regular guest that was supposed to be here just couldn't make it this morning. He was a businessman, Marine, and of course would be bringing a lot of these principles there. Now, you're talking about distribute competence. Tell us about that, Dave.
Yes. Well, and as Andrew pointed out, all these principles work together and reinforce one another. And one of them is distributing competence, where the ideas I think you see in a lot of in the business world and a lot of organizations, you have the idea that you're really brilliant, capable, supposedly most competent people are at the top of the organization, and as their orders trickle down, you just expect your people to just do what they're told. Because you don't want them making decisions. That's for the smart, more experienced people at the top. Well, in the Marines, it's very different than that. And it's well understood that really the most important stuff that happens from the people right at the bottom of that pyramid who are really out on the front lines doing things. And so what you want is everybody in the organizations of all ranks to be able to make decisions. In a fast-moving, complicated situation, you're often cut off for management guidance. That means that the officer's words may not get to you for a number of reasons. The officer may be stretched too thin. Communications may be cut off. It's just too confusing a situation. You need to be able to act, and you need to make decisions sometimes where the consequences of those decisions could be headlines around the world. So if you're guarding an outpost somewhere and a vehicle is heading towards you and it's not slowing down and the people aren't identifying themselves, if you open fire on that vehicle and end up slaughtering an innocent family, that's headlines around the world. On the other hand, if you let that vehicle go and it's terrorists with a bomb in there, that's headlines around the world. So that soldier, that warrior, that Marine on the front lines is making a decision that's important to the future of the United States in many ways, and you want everybody to be able to make those decisions well.
Once again, folks, if you have a question or comment, please call us at 877-573-7825, 877-573-7825. We welcome your comment. Andrew, you had something to add.
Yeah, David, I thought one of the points that builds on what you're just talking about was principle number 13, managing by the end state and telling people what needs to be accomplished and why, but leaving the details to them, and you'll be surprised at what even the lower-ranking Marines or soldiers, in our case, will be able to accomplish.
Yes, and this is something I wish the business world would learn a lot more of this. I mean, how many of us have been stuck working for what we like to call micromanagers, where your boss is telling you exactly how he or she wants it done, and they're looking over your shoulder, no, don't do it that way, don't do it this way. Well, you know, what you see in the military, and I certainly saw it in the Marines over and over again, from the most important things to the most insignificant things, is you don't tell people how to do every little thing. What you do is you tell them how you want things to end up. Make sure they understand the mission. What are the goals of the mission? You give them the tools they need to accomplish the mission, but you leave the details up to them. And one of the reasons that's so important, first of all, people feel better when they have that kind of responsibility. But secondly, you don't know who's going to come up with a better way of doing things. You may think you know the best way to do things. Maybe you've done it 1,000 times. But you often need somebody who's never done it before to come up with 1,001st way of doing it that turns out to be the best way of all. And people do things in a way that complements their own styles and skills. So you really need to let people do things their way, although, of course, what the order has to involve is telling them how you want things to end up.
How long did you research the book?
It was well over a year, and it was originally a cover story for Inc. magazine, and got a tremendous response, and there was some demand to expand it into a book. So I traveled all over the world. I visited Marine outposts in Asia and Europe, throughout North America. I went out to sea with the Marines. I went on live fire exercise.
How did you do all that and get all that permission?
Well, and this is, you know, a very interesting thing. I thought that would be very, very difficult. But the Marines, like all the military branches, they are justifiably very proud of what they do. I mean, look, they're serving this country. They're making tremendous sacrifices. They're smart. They're effective. And they want people to know it. And so they were really very, very open to me, very transparent. There was hardly anything I ever asked that they weren't happy to do for me, and I really appreciated that.
Okay, well, we're coming up on our third break, so we'll be right back with author David H. Freeman, the author of The 30 Management Principles of the U.S. Marines, extrapolating that for the business world and for just the world in general. We'll be right back.
This is Veterans Radio Live on WDEO 990 AM in Ann Arbor, Michigan, WMAX 1440 AM in Saginaw, Michigan, WDEO 98.5 FM in Naples, Florida, or listen online at AveMariaRadio.net.
For America's wounded warriors, sometimes coming home can be a battle in itself. Every one of them needs our support to meet the challenges they face every day. The USO provides Americans a way to offer that support to our wounded warriors and their families. Join us. Visit USO.org to learn how you can make a difference in their lives. The USO.
Eternal Father from Sea, and that is one of the Marine songs that we have. Nina, do you have the name of that CD? Yeah, Esprit de Corps, I thought. Mm-hmm.
That's correct, Bob.
Esprit de Corps. I think they can probably Google that and pick that up. Well, with me right now on Veterans Radio is author David H. Freeman, The 30 Management Principles of the U.S. Marines. And on the line... is with me a Marine. Yes, I have a Marine. He's going to be on our program in the future, but he's on right now. Wrote the book, Cammy Up. Stephen A. Johnson, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Morning.
Well, good morning. Now, you're a Marine, and what was your highest level?
I got to a gunnery sergeant, E7.
Okay. So you got to that point, and how long were you in the Marines?
Well, between active duty and a few years of reserve time, I was in a little over 17 years.
So you were real close to retiring from there, and then you went on to be a lieutenant in the police department. Is that right?
Right. One of the bad things about, and I'm sure this occurs in National Guard as well, you can wind up getting promoted right out because there's no billet above you to move into. That's kind of what happened to me, but... Yes, I joined the Jamestown, New York Police Department in 1968, right after my first 4 years of active duty.
You mean they actually retired you without your permission?
No. Well, I had to pretty much retire myself because, like I said, I had been promoted to gunnery sergeant, but they were going to move me up to first sergeant shortly. But problem was there was no first sergeant billet to go to that I could travel to as a reservist. The nearest one to my home was, one was about 4.5 hours away. The other was 8 hours away. And I just could not put the time into it there as a first sergeant. That's a kind of a special position where you have to there's a lot of administrative things, and you can't just show up one weekend a month to keep track of all that sort of thing. You have to put in a fair amount of your own time, and I did not have that time. I just couldn't do it. To be honest, it broke my heart, but that's the way it went sometimes.
Once again, we're talking with On the Line is Stephen A. Johnson, the author of Cammie Up, CammieUp. How did you come up with that name, Steve?
Well, when I wrote the book, I've done a lot of, you know, writing of small things, short stories, articles, things like that. But the thing that I always have the most trouble with is the title. Like, I'll write the whole thing. This is, what am I going to call this thing? By the way, I'm sorry about my throat. I got a little frog in my throat this morning. So the publisher asked me for a title, of course, and I gave him a couple of ideas that I thought were just pure genius, but they go from a marketing point of view, oddly enough. And so they said, well, send us, you know, a dozen that you can think of, and Cammie Up was one of them. And it might sound like an odd pairing of words until you understand what Cammie is, and Cammie is just a short form, a slang form for camouflage. And the unit I was in was heavy on camouflage. It was a reconnaissance unit.
And when they said that Cammie Up, does that mean you were going outside the wire, or what did that mean?
Okay, it just means basically you're going to start your patrol. You're still back on the base, and you're getting ready. You're getting all your supplies and gear and your operational orders and so forth. And about the last thing you do then, in my case, in my unit's case, was you put on your camouflage makeup, for lack of a better word. It's a stick of, it was supposed to be kind of a pliable stuff. You could paint, you could rub on your face and arms and stuff. It was more like plaster. We had to soften it with the insect repellent that we were issued in order to get it to go on without, you know, making, tearing your skin. But we put that on any exposed flesh. And, you see it in the movies all the time. They've got these daubs of stuff on their faces that is pitiful. In reality, what they call camouflage, they're just little daubs of makeup. We covered every square inch, the back of our necks, everything.
Well, no, when I'm looking here at your book, and I mean, folks, this is really quite a tome. There's almost 300 pages and maps and things and all this about Marine, and he was Stephen Johnson was a recon Marine in Vietnam, so he knows what the heck is going on. But when you did all this and you decided to write this book, it took a business plan. How did you what part of Marine training did you base that business plan?
Well, first the basic business plan, if you will, or battle plan, is in the Marine Corps, is a thing called a five-paragraph order. And the first letter of each paragraph is S-M-E-A-C. The acronym is SMEAC. And that five-paragraph order gives you the basic information you need to fill out a plan of any kind, whether it's a business plan or a battle plan. It leaves practically nothing to the imagination. It sort of thinks for you. All you do is fill in what that paragraph asks you to fill in based on whatever it is you have to do. And so I sat down when I decided to write this thing. First of all, I just started off making a lot of notes to myself, just dredging my memory. But then I had to put it in some kind of order. And this SMEAC, this five-paragraph order, while it wasn't designed for book writing, it still is a plan, and you can follow it and adapt it. You've already mentioned a couple things about adapting to the situation, and so I just adapted that plan into a writing plan, if you will, and went from there.
So, Stephen, you've been on hold, and you've heard the program, and you've heard author David Friedman. What can you recall some of the things that he talked about that you were able to use yourself? There you go. What are those principles?
Well, you mean as far as writing the book or just being as a Marine?
Well, I would think being as a Marine and writing the book, being able to take that out into the civilian world, that's very important.
Okay. As you suggested a couple days ago when we were talking on the phone, I found these 30 principles online, and I've been looking at them over the last few days. And I can equate to virtually every one of them as having, you know, without having seen it in print before, I'm thinking, oh, yeah, that's right. That's right. And, yep, that's you got it. And there's only a couple of these that I have any question about at all, and it's only on semantics. It's not the basic principle that I disagree with. And but the most of it here does seem to apply to teamwork, but following orders as well.
No,
you have to be able to give them in order to take them. You know, that's
when you were writing your book, you probably had some issues with the publisher, et cetera, and where did that training then help you to overcome those issues?
Well, absolutely. I wouldn't call them issues. These people, McFarland Publishing, they were so patient and so professional with me that it was. I told them three or four times. We communicated back and forth by email quite a bit. And I told my contact there several times. I said, I can't believe how patient you people are with me. But when there was any issue at all, they were willing to hear me out. At the same time, I was more than willing to hear what they had to say. They were the experts. I was not. And, you know, it's where you listen to the experience and gain from it. And they were the experience, and I was gaining every time we communicated. When it came to compiling an index, for instance, at the back of the book, I never had given that any thought. That's a very complicated process, but they sent me clear directions and advised me all the way along the line when I had a question, and the index that I finally put together and returned to them, they said, this is almost totally done. There's very little we have to do to make it right, and it was because I listened to them, as you would hope that any subordinate would listen to you as a leader.
And you can comment on this. Failure is not an option. Is that right?
Right. You start off with, I mean, you don't plan to fail. You plan to win. The Marine Corps has two very, very simple premises, I guess, for lack of a better term. One of them is see the hill, take the hill. There it is. Go get it. Don't monkey around. The other one is, and this one isn't totally tactically true, but it's used to refer to it as hey, diddle, diddle, straight up the middle. Again, no monkeying around. You know what has to be done. This is how it has to be accomplished, and you don't sit around and overthink it, over-engineer it. You just go do it.
Well, Andrew here is shaking his head, and I'm sure you met some Marines in Iraq. Isn't that right, Andrew?
Yeah, we worked a little bit with Marines, but more importantly, I'm a reconnaissance platoon leader myself, Gunnery Sergeant, so I can relate to the importance of reconnaissance in the job.
How did
that
you
we
find
do.
These guys?
How did I find the Marines? Very
yeah.
intelligent. Whenever I did any training with them, they were constantly at the front of the class. They made the rest of us look bad. We used to want to try to take them out so that we could get some of the credit for being the best guys. But honestly, they're very well prepared, very intelligent individuals that take their mission very seriously. And more importantly, when they come to an Army school like they do with us, I mean, they're there to represent not only themselves but the Marine Corps as well, and they take that responsibility very seriously.
Well, okay, let's get back to David Friedman and his book, The 30 Management Principles of the U.S. Marines. Well, there's going to be quite a few going to be cut loose when we downsize out of Afghanistan, and these folks are going to be coming out. They're going to be coming out into the civilian world. They're going to be bringing all these traits with them, and I think that's very important that we get this information out, that these men and women they're already trained. Those of you business owners out, they're already trained. They know how to take orders. They show up. They do their job. Everybody here is shaking their head. So, David, I'm noticing here that you're talking about and that you took this Marine, it's a focus group. There we go. That focus group is fast, versatile, and effective in complex situations. Wow, that's a big, tall statement. You want to give us something on that, Dave?
Yeah, Yeah, and really, this is a business book. This book was aimed largely at the business community, essentially to say, look, the Marines have figured out a lot of things that organizations have not, and organizations need to learn from Marines. And one of the points I make in the book is that people who come out of the Marines, and this is true, of course, of the armed forces in general, are very, very well equipped to take part in the business world or any organization, and as leaders as well. And they make terrific managers. They have really learned how to work with other human beings and get the most out of them in a way that makes everybody feel good about what they've done and about what the mission is and about each other. And I think this is what we all want out of life. We don't just want to succeed as individuals. I think it's very important for us as humans to feel we're part of a team, that the mission matters, and that we can contribute to it and we can help the fellow members of the team. And the Marines have figured this out, and this we need more of this in the business world. So, yeah, I urge anyone out there, any business out there, if you have an opportunity to hire a Marine or a soldier from the Army or the National Guard or Air Force or Navy or the Coast Guard, I mean, you have a real opportunity to bring in somebody who can really contribute to the organization. And anybody who thinks that you're bringing on somebody who only knows how to follow orders and isn't creative and is just a follower or doesn't know how to get along with other people, you really have a bad understanding of how the military works.
Well, that's
so
what,
that I try to get that across.
That's here. What your book is all about. That's what our program is all about. Next week it's going to be a program, and it'll be about jobs for military, former military people. Sergeant Johnson, you want to comment on that?
Well,
was it Gunny or Sergeant?
Gunny. You can call me Gunny. Call me Steve. Just don't call me late for dinner.
Formation.
Yeah.
late for formation. There you go.
Yep.
Comment on that. Comment on
Well, as Mr. Friedman was saying, that most military veterans come out of the military, as he said, prepared. We've been living minimum 2 years, most often 4 years, and in many cases many years, of in a structured society with rules and regulations that are adhered to. You're expected to adhere to them. Everybody knows the rules, and it's quite different than society is. I kind of had to learn that coming off of active duty going on the police department, that a military legal system is not the same as the social military system. It's pretty slack, actually.
Now, when you experienced that, were you confident then because of the training you had?
Oh, absolutely. It was not exactly sure how to put it. I just felt like I was in control. Even as a young, new police officer, I'm still on probationary status, I didn't know everything there was to know about law enforcement, because you never do. I mean, nobody ever knows everything there is. But I felt confident. Those punks out on the street will spot you for a new guy right away, and they'll test you. And I took the advice of the older officers in the department, plus, again, the confidence I had built up over 4 years in the Marines to handle those situations. And everything worked out okay as far as that goes. I have seen young police officers who were well, I'm not sure what the right word there is either, but they were cowed by the circumstances a little bit because of their inexperience.
And you were able to step up into the fray.
Yes.
Well, Gunny Johnson, I want to thank you very much for being on the program. Your book, Cammy Up, is available on the Veterans Radio bookstore. We're going to have you on again. Oh, boy, there's the theme music in the background. David Friedman, this is your second time with Veterans Radio. Once again, I want to thank you for taking your time out. On Saturday morning, where we, yes, you did. You got up early, and now you can go have you and pet the dog and do all that other stuff. Next week is going to be Bob Gould. We're going to be back. Veterans Radio, jobs. Until then, you're dismissed.
All views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily of Veterans Radio or this station. Veterans Radio is a production of Veterans Radio, LLC.